Joining us now, the institution. That's right. We'll just start calling him the institution. Dave Pezzo joining us, the Pezzo Center, Pezzo Financial, on Facebook, on Twitter, podcasts, Money Matters, Saturdays, 8 to 10, right here on KIDO Talk Radio. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, Kevin.
So you take a look economically at the impact the president's exoneration has. Of course, the libs aren't saying that. Your thoughts, will this impact the markets throughout the week, do you think?
I don't think so, Kevin, because I think it's been expected, right? I think there is a certain relief that there isn't something there. But I would put it this way. If there was, if it had come out differently, then I think the markets would tank. I think that would be the concern, is that there was going to be ongoing investigations. The fact that they leaked for the last several months, that there's really no there. In other words, they were trying to get out in front of the fact that this was a witch hunt, and they did, in fact, finally put that out. But I still think it's another thing that's gone. It's another worry that's out of the way as we chip away to this constant, you know, new worries come up, and then we chip them away, and new worries come up. But this is one that's been there for a long time. Good to see it go, Kevin. I don't expect Wall Street to have a big rally about it, though.
On the other hand, though, you still have the Democrats saying the president wasn't exonerated. He's a bad president. They're going to get him. They're just not done. It's almost like when you put water on an electrical fire, it just makes it worse.
I don't know what they're thinking, Kevin, and maybe it's me. I can't believe that there aren't people out there that are going to be saying, what is going on with these people? I cannot associate myself with a bunch of nut jobs that just won't quit. And it doesn't take a lot. As we all know, elections spin around those people in the middle, right, that will swing left or right or with one, contender or another. They don't always vote straight Republican or straight Democrat. And I can't believe that those people are happy about the fact that you can take any citizen in the United States and destroy them, and that we really don't have rule of law, that the FBI, Justice Department can just keep going after people, and the Congress in particular won't take no for an answer. It's not that, you know, they've gone through millions at, what is it, $30 million or something like that? $25 million that they spent. And we already know that it was stacked against Trump. So it's not exactly his Justice Department. Mueller and all of those folks are far left-wing people, and they couldn't come up with something. That's not enough for the Dems. And I can't believe that there really are people out there that think, wow, I'm just so proud. This is my party, man. I'm so proud of them that they do not operate by rule of law. Let's put them in power, and let's see if they can't control this country and drive us towards a dictatorship.
Dave Pezzo joining us, Kevin Miller in the morning. What does it, though, say that here you have a president that has done wonders with the economy, but it's not enough, that we have people continuing to go after him? It does undermine his authority. Doesn't it undermine the process?
It does undermine the process. It undermines his authority, and we elected him. I didn't see this happening when Obama was in and trying to turn us into a socialist nation. He did a pretty good job of doing that. Nearly destroyed the United States, as we all well know and is well documented. But the reality is nobody's out there trying to figure out illegal acts. This is bizarre, and it's over the top, and it does undermine the presidency. And I think it's just a really sad day that they just won't shut up and go away. And I don't believe, I get maybe it's me being an optimist, Kevin, but I can't believe that this is a good strategy for the Democrats.
Dave Pezzo joining us. He'll answer your questions on money. 580-5436. 580-KIDO. Are the good times rolling still? I mean, a little bumpy last week in the stock market. You're going to go, oh, no, negative Nelly, Kevin Miller. But
no, it was bumpy.
And then you have people saying the great recession indicator has hit, and sooner or later it's going to be bad. I'm not rooting for that. I'd like to be right occasionally, but I'm not rooting for a recession, certainly.
Yeah. Okay. Well, like a stopped watch. We will, I swear, we will have a recession again someday, Kevin, and then right. You can be right. You can dance on my grave, buddy. but the thing is right now the economy is okay, but it's not great. There are indications of global growth slowing down, not in the United States, but outside the United States, things are slowing. Now, when you have that impacts the big multinational corporations that we have in the United States. So there is a big impact in the U.S. We export a lot as well as import. People obviously are aware of the trade wars going on, but we also export a lot around the world. And when that is slowing down, we don't export as much. So therefore, it does have a little bit of an impact. But that's all. Right now, corporate profits are still good. And all you ever read about financially, just remember, whenever you pick something up, it's all bad all the time. And there's a number of good reasons why. Number one, we don't read good news. We just won't. We just ignore it. It's like, yeah, the market did okay. All right, well, what else? We want bad news, number one. Number two, bad news sells. It sells gold. It sells silver. It sells equity indexed annuities. Fear sells product to people. So it is in the best interest of all the advertisers and all to put people on to scare people. So we do wind up in a world of very, very negative financial reporting, and all numbers are never going to be going one direction. So we have mixed numbers right now. And that's all I'm going to say as far as those numbers go. It's not all positive indicators, but it certainly is not all negative, and it doesn't look like a recession.
Dave Pezzo joining us. Of course, Apple making their big announcement concerning getting into the streaming service. You know, we were talking about this earlier. Are we jumping the shark with too much streaming? Netflix, Marvel, Paramount, Hulu. I'm probably living out like seven others.
Agreed. Yeah. YouTube, right?
YouTube, ESPN.
That's the big one now. I don't think so, Kevin. Yes and no. It's just that the alternatives are there. But think how great that is for the consumer, right? But what we're seeing right now is a revolution, if you will, radio to TV. Now TV to you making the choices, not just of what channel you watch, but what channels you have available to watch. So you're going to be dialing it in to Kevin TV, which won't look like Dave TV. It's going to be a different one, and you're going to pay for only what you use. I think this is a marvelous thing, and it's just really getting going, and that's why you're seeing so many operators. In the end, Kevin, there won't be this many operators because they will be filtered out by competition. They all can't make it, and we're already seeing the cable companies beginning to die.
Right. When we take a look at the cable companies, obviously one of the biggest is DirecTV. They've got a lot of people that work here in the call centers and such. AT&T coming in and making some changes to how you get your DirecTV, that sort of thing. But a company like DirecTV or Time Warner or any of these companies that rely on you subsidizing the Flower Channel, subsidizing CNN, if you had to pick, I don't think a lot of people would be tuned into CNN. CNN gets a dollar for every subscriber they have. Fox News is a little higher. ESPN is the highest, but how many people really buy their cable or buy their satellites for one particular channel?
I do. If ESPN wasn't on, I'd be a rabbit ear guy.
Right, but you could buy ESPN by itself then.
Now you can. In the old days, you couldn't, and so a lot of people. But anyway, you're right, Kevin, and I think that's just that those days are gone. Where you're right, and so, now I'm told by, if you will, people in the industry, experts, that they can now are going to go back and rebundle stuff like all of the Flower Channel or whatever, Home and Garden, all those things will be one bundle you'll pay, 50 cents a month for or something, and then you can pick and choose. Outdoorsman, I always laugh about all the fishing shows that are out there. Well, if that's what you like, then you might be paying for a group of that, including hunting, fishing, etc. Something that matches your taste may still be available where my concern is that we won't have experimental TV, meaning you're only going to dial in what's immediately profitable, and we won't have people discovering there's a neat station over here. But by this kind of bundling, I'm hopeful we'll get creativity as well.
Right. It's amazing how our channels are. So back to Apple.
Yeah.
I mean.
It's a big announcement. This is kind of big.
Right. But I mean, they're buying all these Hollywood studios and such. But what's Apple going to have that Netflix doesn't have? And Netflix, by the way, Business Wars, great podcast, where we have IBM versus Univac versus all these other computer things. But Netflix versus Blockbuster, what makes Netflix so unique is they came up with this algorithm that when you would, let's say, watch some type of show, they would get a recycled show, let's say Burn Notice, right? You would watch Burn Notice reruns, and all of a sudden the algorithm would pick up something that you like about that show. And as you see on Netflix, they pick other shows that you may like.
Yeah, right.
Like original series and such. So until somebody comes up with an algorithm, I think, that rivals that, and maybe Apple can, you know, how successful is anybody going to be against Netflix?
Well, Amazon is, but you're right. But I think that Netflix has a huge and global advantage at this point in time. There's so much money in it that it's totally fine for several people to be involved in it. And let's face it, Apple, we trust, right? Well, have you noticed the commercials lately? What's that?
Netflix just raised its prices.
They did. Yeah. And I think they can raise it again and everybody will pay for it, wouldn't they?
I don't know about that one.
Yeah.
Well, I got to tell you, I mean, $12.99, yeah, it's okay. But, I mean, if you're bundling that with cable, this, that, and the other, and the only, and you can't write that stuff off or it's limited how much you can write off.
Yep.
I mean, I back to you.
Nope. It's, you know, think of it this way. If you are dialing back your cable because you can and now have a basic cable, and then along with that your movie channels, your premium station,
sure,
that's Netflix. That's a lot less than it used to be for the whole package, right?
Right.
If you're talking about the whole package and you're layering things on, then that's an entertainment choice, I suppose, you're making. But at any rate, we are going to see a lot of choices, Kevin, that we're all going to be able to make. And that, to me, is very, very exciting. For the consumer, it's going to be a deadly game for many, many companies. Many billions will be spent and lost in this pursuit.
Well, your billions?
I will not be investing billions in that. I guess if you want to count my small investment in Netflix, okay, and Apple.
More coming up with Dave Petso, Kevin Miller, KIDO Talk Radio. Continuing on with our great friend Dave Petso, Kevin Miller in the Morning, 107.5 FM, 580 AM. So Dave Petso, a big feature in the Meridian Press this week concerning Sensi, a $450 million company. They go back and saying in 2004, they just had these containers, and the founders of Sensi have stuck with it. They employ, I think they're the third or fourth largest employer in Meridian. Big success story. And you go anywhere across the country, and they'll go, wow, you know where Sensi is? You know where their headquarters is? It's a big deal.
It is a big deal. It's a beautiful building and a big part of the community. There's no question about it. It's a huge success story.
You take a look at what it takes to have that type of success, that drive, that determination, you know, the brink of losing it all and then you gain it all. I mean, mm-hmm. You hear that all the time.
You do. And there's no question there's certain twists and turns of luck, if you will, in any industry, any business that makes it, where something comes along just at the right time. But without that determination and, you know, just that raw perseverance that no matter what, we're not quitting. Businesses don't exist. You see it time and time again. I do not understand in our country, and the narrative right now is very frustrating for me, and quite frankly, it's frightening for my grandchildren and great-grandkids, any generation to come, is the idea that business is bad and innovation and creation is somehow going to be helped or enhanced by a bigger and bigger government when it all of history says it won't. When we get more government involved in things, it ruins things. And I don't just mean it makes it inefficient. It takes our freedom away. And freedom, in my mind, is the seed of all of our creativity, is just that I'm free to think and let my mind go where it wants and pursue whatever is just burning in my belly. I've got to go do this thing. Or I just want to be successful. Whatever it is, it drives people to work 60 or 70 hours a week through the hard times, to get an education, to go to night school, do whatever it is. These are the innovators and creators of the next generation of great stuff that we all enjoy, and they're the great employers as well. This is what we need to really focus on when we're talking about capitalism and why socialism and bigger government is really deadly to our way of life.
Speaking of something that could be deadly to our way of life, the legislature continues to debate Medicaid expansion. Some have said, like Kevin Miller, there needs to be a cap on the spending because we started with $60,000. Now proponents of the Medicaid expansion say it should be $120,000. You've got the feds currently funding 90%, the state responsible for 10%, but that's not guaranteed as well. Now people saying there should be a work requirement. What's the business impact on this?
Well, Kevin, right now the business impact is great because you're starting at the early stages of it, which says the federal government pays 90% of the bill, which means it's less of a burden on business. And in the long run, whenever you get in bed with the government, you are going to die. And so that's why I think you're onto it by saying if we have got to find a cap here of what we're going to spend. Because before long, the costs of this program are going to be out of control, because that's what government does best. It is to talk about a program, to undersell it, and then overpromise and underdeliver. And that will require much more money. Oops, we need more money. The program isn't working, so we need more money. Instead of fixing anything, government always just needs more money. And so I agree with you. I think that's not really a good solution, is to say we need to limit this to a certain dollar amount, so we aren't just continuing to feed this pig.
Indeed. Of course, you have the best intentions. And what about the idea of the work requirements? What do you make of that?
About the work? I love it. Kevin, you've heard me say it many times. I'll say it again. No work, no worth. I mean, that's just human beings. We do not have a worth when we do not work. And it's just a wrong way to look at things. If we give people money, that's kindness. That is not kindness. That's enslavement. And it does not allow for human beings to prosper. It really does not. It's like not having any boundaries on your children. There are certain things that you have to have, and we have to do as human beings. We have to eat right. We have to exercise, move. These are all functions of being healthy, and we all understand that. But I don't understand why we ever have arguments about work. Work is the same thing. You and I have to have a reason to get up in the morning. And if we don't, this is not good for our psyche. It's not good for us. We disintegrate as human beings.
Kevin Miller in the Morning, KIDO Talk Radio. Dave Petzo joining us on 107.5 FM, 580 AM. So back to anything we should be looking out for this week locally.
No, not really, Kevin. Micron announced their earnings last week, and they were better than expected. You don't want to say they were blockbuster, but they were blockbuster compared to expectations. So again, Micron doing well in a world where people continue to guess that there's just too many chips out there, microchips, of course, but at the same time, they're just doing very well. And so local news-wise, that's about it, Kevin, because we're still seeing home sales do well. And with interest rates coming down again, I would suspect this spring selling season is going to be hot again here in Boise.
Take a looking at 24/7 Wall Street, just released its findings. Boise ranked 20 out of the top 25, one of the fastest-growing cities in the country. Of course, this is one of the things we always harp on. The infrastructure just can't keep up with it. People driving in right now will tell you it's a mess. Coming home after 3:30, 4:30 at night, it is a mess. It is infringing on the quality of life. And yet, nobody seems to be doing anything about it.
No. Well, they're building as fast as they can is what they'll tell you.
But building you can't buildings, keep up. Not building roads.
I know. We do. We really do need more attention to the roads, and we've got to get on it. And again, when we make priorities like you and I've talked many times out of Americana and a bike lane, instead of when we could have spent it took 3 months to do that and millions of dollars, we could have been doing something that really matters, expanding Shinden. You might say, oh, that's a state highway, whatever. It doesn't matter. There's 10 different projects you and I can come up with in 10 seconds that are really critically needed to expand roadways, especially out in the hinterlands where you live.
Speaking of which, City of Nampa last week, maybe it was 2 weeks ago, did increase impact fees for developers.
Yep.
The developing community is not happy about it. They'll say they're just going to pass it on. Is that a good first step? Meridian rumored to be doing that as well.
Yeah, Kevin, we have to. There's no question. The impact fee is the way we tax to build more roads and sewers and things like that that are needed as more people move here. And it seems to be the most widely accepted. I can't think of a better way to do it. You've got to come up with the money somehow. And if people are moving here and causing all of us to expand the sewer plant, I think the new people should pay for it. Not exclusively, because economic development is good for everyone. But at the same time, they need to pay the bulk of it, and that's what impact fees do.
And finally, the legislature continues its debate concerning urban renewal, whether or not citizens should have the right to vote on urban renewal projects like a new library, a new stadium in the city of Boise or anywhere else. You have the mayor very upset about that. You have legislators that are within the Boise area saying this is anti-Boise. This bill was put together to pass the House by House Majority Leader Mike Moyle of Star. Your thoughts?
Kevin, I think that this bill never would have existed if the mayor, city council had not overstepped. And overstepping by, we're going to put in a bike lane down Main Street no matter what. We're going to do a trolley no matter what. We're going to do a stadium no matter what. And people are fed up with this overreach. And so now we want to put it into a law. But I am concerned about it. We have a representative government. We shouldn't be voting on everything, every little decision. And where does this lead us down the road? We have representatives. We vote for them to make decisions. And we don't like all their decisions. And that's just tough. That's the way politics, that's the way government works. I am concerned, but I do understand why, because this was such an overreach of we're just going to do this thing, and these things. And so the citizens are pushing back. I'm not sure how to write the bill, but I think when it's a major decision, it's going to impact me for years, impact my quality of life perhaps, but most certainly my pocketbook. I think that we should have a say as individual citizens.
Sound like you're running for office?
I do. It just seems logical to me.
Kind of gave both sides of the story there.
Well, that's fair. But I do understand. But again, I'm not convinced that we should be voting on many things. I do think when it affects major decisions in our life, we should have a say. I'm not sure exactly how to write that and draw the line there. I don't want any little decision made by some silly votes.
Dave Pezzo, the Pezzo Center. Thank you, sir. Appreciate you as always. Catch him this Saturday, 8 to 10 on Money Matters. You're listening to Kevin Miller, KIDO Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining us. And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Yep. Best quarter in years. That just doesn't seem right. You know how I was talking before, and we'll touch on some of these things. Some of the interesting facts of the market about how most days are up, but barely, right? They're just barely up, and how 0.003% compounded every day since the 1970s is like 3,000%, right? Interesting facts, right? But this is not just an interesting fact. This is amazing. We're up 13% since the beginning of the year. We're up 16% on the NASDAQ. Those, by the way, were the stocks that got hit the hardest. And, of course, there was net selling in December at the bottom. Why? It's just one of those things where you just have to constantly ask ourselves, why are we so bad at this? Why? Why do we do this over and over again and expect different results? And I really do think that structurally human beings aren't built to do this because we just don't get the simplicity of it. Which is why we try to talk about that in a simple way. Putting your money in month after month, leave it alone. Let me repeat the three most important things that you do in investing. Leave it alone. Leave it alone. Leave it alone. And then the years roll by and you are literally financially independent. I don't have enough money. I just can't put much away. And I don't, just the endless number of excuses. But that's fine. You can have those excuses for you and your brain because you don't want to feel like a loser. I get it. And that wasn't meant to sting. That was only meant to say, look, that's what humans do. When we buy a stock and then it goes down, we feel like a loser, even if in the long run, nothing's changed, nothing at all with that stock, and it goes to the moon. It's a great pick, but you didn't get it at the exact low, so you're a loser. And then if you go ahead and trim a position appropriately or get out of a stock because you don't think the future's that good, and it goes up another point, that's right, you got it. Way to go, loser. We all feel that way all the time. One of the things that I've really thought a lot about, and it doesn't make it right, it just, for me, it was right, okay? was perfect is the enemy of great. I mean, and it's the dead enemy of really good. But great is what we all want to be, right? We want to be great. But we don't move, won't take action unless we're just sure it's perfect, right? So we won't pull the trigger when stocks are down. So we look at this incredible gift. It's just like the market is good, the economy is good, everything's fine. You know, I'm sure you can run, all you have to do is watch the news, and if you want to watch the fake news channels, you can do that too. In particular, they're just going to give you the laundry list of everything that's wrong in the world and how your president's going to be impeached and the market will tank. That's going to happen any second, any day now. And this went on for 2 years as the market went up. Why did the market go up? Well, was it QE? No, they ended QE. Can we just shut up about QE? The Fed isn't our hero, and yet that's what the drivel is every day. Oh, well, if the Fed would back off, oh, if the Fed's too strong, blah, 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 blah. They're raising rates. They sold their bonds back. Would they raise rates 8 times, 7 times? And the market went up. Why? Because the economy's good. Do I have to think a lot more about stuff? Do I really have to work through all the things and why Turkey is an enormous problem in the world? Why the Syria mess? Why the Trump thing? This is not going to work. You can if you drive yourself crazy, but if you just look back and say the economy is good and here's what the market gave you, would you like to take 20 or 30% off of your tech stocks? The greatest corporations in the world, like Google, Apple, Amazon, because they're right now they're available for a third off. Oh, but wait a minute. They might go down 40%, not 33%. I better wait. It really looks icky out there. And we miss it because, like, blink, the market takes off. And here we are. And those great corporations of the world are, sorry, but they're not off 30% anymore. Yeah, I probably better wait, huh? Yeah, I don't want to, you know, overpay. And then we wait. And this goes on and on and on and on. And we do it again and again. People were net sellers in December. Not only didn't they invest or add more to their investments when they were bargains, on average, people took money out. Out. Why? Because here it comes. Here comes 2008 again. No, it isn't coming. That's not what it looks like. That looks like a normal, yeah, a little more severe than perfectly normal. This looks like a normal slash severe correction. That's what it looks like. It looks like an amazing opportunity, not just in the rearview mirror, but every time it happens. Because what if you did buy down 20% or 15% and it went down 20? Oh, you are a loser. No, you're not. Because it went straight back up and through. Guess what? I know that because the stocks we were buying at the beginning of December just kept cratering. Cratering, cratering. And so the middle of December, you're buying more, and they're cratering. And then Christmas Eve, ho, 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 the worst Christmas Eve ever, turned out to mark the dead bottom. Day after Christmas, the best day after Christmas ever. I mean, who'd have thunk it, right? Literally, the next market day, we're gone. That's it. Over. Done. Correction over. Up 1,000 points. Never look back. People get locked out. We do it over and over and over again. It's amazing how people do that. And then we miss it. Well, the Fed this or the Fed that. No, the economy's fine. Markets have corrections and machines do 80% of the trading. And so when things are going down, they keep going down. And maybe in hindsight, it was like, oh, yeah, that's right. A record number of hedge funds closed their doors in the last selling day for them to get out and give money to their customers before the end of the year was like around Christmas. And the machines drove it down too. I don't know. But if the economy is good and corporate profits are growing, just buy stocks and put them away and quit worrying about the day-to-day fluctuations. And if in fact, the market gives you a great and glorious gift, which means you can get higher dividends, substantially, 20, 25% higher dividends all the days the rest of your life. I want more income. How about a raise? 25%? Like in one shot? Here's what is required of you. Buy when stocks are down. That's all. You mean I don't have to show up at work? I don't have to get a 5% raise for 5 years? No. One-time shot. Boom. And quit feeling like a loser when you buy something and it goes lower. Because we're not. We're winners. Winners fall down, get up, and do it again. Winners don't worry about being perfect. Winners just finish. They just keep going. You want to know something? This is just something I've just been thinking about this past week, and I don't want to get political. But it's just right in your face. Doggone it, this president is tough. I mean, this is a really, really gritty guy. You may not like a lot of things about him. I don't. Never did. But this guy is just tough. He just takes it and takes it and takes it and rolls. Amazing. Don't bet against him. It sure hasn't paid off so far. Not once. Not once. Grit. And that's what you and I have to have a little bit of. Just a little bit. And that's the only thing I can come up with because this is so easy. Why in the world do people bail? Why in the world do people think that stocks are risky? It doesn't even make sense. It just doesn't. It is risky if you put money in, money you need like a year from now. That's risky because it might be lower priced. But when you diversify across the stock market and leave it in for any period of time, let me repeat this. You win 100% of the time. What sounds risky about that? But, oh, it's risky. And that's how we get in these ridiculous products. The equity indexed annuity pimp will be on shortly. And then he'll tell you all about the Wall Street casino and scare you. Gee whiz. I'll talk later about structured notes. Somebody asked me about that again this week, and somebody sent me an email about it. So I'll talk about that again. But what that basically is trying to guarantee your results. And what do you give up? That's what an equity index annuity does. The problem is you give it all up. You give it all up. I talked here two weeks ago about equity index annuities, and I will only touch on them. I promise it's not going to be the annuity show or the anti-annuity show. But I have been asked again and an email all the time. What was that about structured notes you were talking about? Okay, and how? And then also it ties into what I had talked about 2 weeks ago on equity index annuities. So we'll touch on that in the second hour. But right now, what I want to focus on is what in the world is the matter with us that we see risk, we see fear where it doesn't exist. Now, most of you know I broke my leg earlier this year, right? Now, I broke it in a silly thing because I fell, right? Basically, I fell on it. I passed out and I fell on it, right? Oh, but I had to walk up all these stairs and do all these things and all this stuff, and it could have been worse, right? How many people fall, like literally fall? This is human nature, what I'm talking about, and how we see things in multiple ways that come right back to finance and how we're sure this time's different and we're going to lose all our money. It could have been worse. That's what people say. Wow, that's good. At least it could have been worse. How many people fall, pass out, whatever, trip, slide, slip, and break their leg? The answer is almost no one. It's a really bad luck thing to have happen. Okay? I'm fine now, by the way. I'm running. Everything's great. It's great. It healed wonderfully. Okay? If I got lucky, it was because the break was so clean. So it was a good-sized break, but it was clean. I didn't have to have pins and surgeries and all that. Okay? I suppose, and I joke about this, but it's our human nature. You're right. It could have been worse. I could have been lying in bed and hit by a meteorite. It's possible. It has happened in history. Things can always be worse. But when we think about it in stocks, what it does is instead of saying, aha, how what a wonderful thing I can buy at 10% down, even 20% down. We say it could be worse. We think that way. And the news tells us that. It reinforces this negative thing like, no, not today. No, not today. Don't you think, and then fill in the blank, list the 10 reasons why the market is going to go down. Because you just like basically just regurgitated the news. Thank you very much. Absolutely worthless. You regurgitated exactly what everybody already knows and therefore is not worth knowing. It's what we do. We continue to see what could go wrong from here and why we have to catch the bottom. Again, perfect is the enemy of great. Perfect is the enemy of great investing. Just be a great investor. Warren Buffett isn't perfect, but isn't he great? Right? That's what we want to be. That's what we want to be. All right, I'm way over. I got to take a quick break. And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. And if you, like many, prefer email, it's dave@petsofinancial.net. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome back, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436, 580-KIDO. And I mean this with all sincerity. I just can't thank you enough for the opportunity to do this for 35 years or so. It's crazy. It's crazy. And of course, I wish I was 35 years old again, but we don't get to do that. I just can't believe that I've been doing this since I was in my early 20s. So it's crazy. Absolutely crazy. Thank you. And I mean that with all my heart. And thank you for all participating over the years. Some of you have been listening for 30 years. That's an incredible honor. It really is. And it really feels great. So thank you. Thank you for that. And right now, I would love to thank somebody for giving us a call at 580-KIDO. Now, as I mentioned before, I will talk about these structured notes. I have another notice here. But I got a really fascinating email question, okay? So Tina asks, Sean Hannity interviewed the president last week over the phone. You know, so he has the ability to get the president on the line. What would you ask the president about the economy or really about anything if you had a chance to ask him? And I thought, wow, that's fantastic. I don't want to think about it too long. I could think about this all day long. What question would you ask? And of course, if you and I were going to interview the president, like Sean Hannity did, I'm sure he did think about every single question all day long or days long. And multiple people did. What's the best question? What would you ask? And so on. But I don't want to think about it. I don't want you to either, because I think it's a fascinating question to ask. What would you ask? And the first thing that popped into my head would be, or was, why do you think people oppose the freedom that capitalism offers? Why can't we get that message across? Why can't you? Why do people look for government solutions when they have not been? You know, where do we lose the message? I could frame the question, or I hopefully would frame the question better than that. But it would be why and where? How is it we lose that message? I mean, this is the greatest nation in the world. The most abundant by far. We create everything in the world, and what we're trying to do is become like other nations that don't do anything, that have slow economies and have a difficult time raising people out of poverty and changing an entire generation to come from a family. In other words, you have a great entrepreneur who makes a lot of money. That's America. And changes the trajectory of his entire family. That's America. That is not Germany. It's not France. It's not Italy. It isn't what they do. because socialism crushes your ability to move. But anyway, but my point is, that's what I would like to ask. Why are we missing that? How do we miss that? And so, Tina, thanks. That's just what popped into my head. But I thought it was such a great question that I think it's a question we all should think about. What would be the great questions to ask? Because it's really what's on our hearts, too, isn't it? What's wrong with us? Why do we see things that aren't true? Why do we find negativity everywhere? Why do we think that our country is such a terrible place, is such a so filled with injustice, such a horrible place compared to pick something, whatever people's fantasy is of where it's perfect? It's not. But nowhere is. We're as close to it as it gets. That's what's amazing about it. But we miss markets, we miss everything when we don't see that clarity. All right, we got to take a quick break for Fox News. Hour two coming up. Hello and welcome. Hour number two upcoming. And of course, as we like to say, these are my opinions and my opinions only. And by the way, you know what? I'm not even required to read this script or anything like that. These are not the normal legal disclosures. We mean it. We mean it. Right? I mean, we're not here to tell you what to buy or sell. That's just, in my mind, to be very blunt, it's idiotic. It's toxic to watch that nonsense. It absolutely is. It leads people further from the truth, makes them feel like they ought to be doing something instead of actually doing nothing is what they ought to be doing. Buy. Leave it alone. You will become wealthy. Really tough formula this is. But it is incredibly hard for human beings to do. And sure, you can overweight and underweight certain sectors and things like that. And I think that's that kind of dynamic investing is a great idea. But overweight and underweight, people get carried away and it becomes an all or none thought process. You know, the world's ending, so I better get out. Get out to them doesn't mean you raise 5% more cash or 10. It means you sell half or all. And that is deadly. Deadly arrogance to boot. Wow. How arrogant a thought that I know the future. I know Warren Buffett, Peter Lynch, Michael Price, John Templeton. They couldn't get it, but I got it. I got it. Right here in Boise, Idaho. Woo-hoo. I got it. I know how to time the market. I mean, it's obvious. Can't you see it? Yeah, you see it for thousands of percent. Thousands of percent. Oh, I got to find this while we're talking here. And Diane, ring back. Hope that's you're going to ring back here. Hang on. Somebody. All right. Hang on. We've got to put somebody on hold. Good. I handled it. Hang on. You wait right there. And Ray will pick you up here in a second. He's busy. All right. I want to find this one simple thing because I got to tell you, this was an incredible and simple and easy point. From Brian Westbury, he's one of the best economists in the country. He's certainly one of the smartest people you've never heard of, okay? I mean, the guy is brilliant, all right? He's really good and very different, okay? Talks about the fact that the whole financial crisis was not related to the government and et cetera, et cetera. It's fantastic stuff, just really deep dive. And guess what they've nailed for 10 years? The whole recovery, right? Who hasn't? Everyone else. That's one of the reasons we really like him. But here it is. Okay, because everybody's all hyped up and hot and bothered about what? The inverted yield curve. And I know, don't worry, my own eyeballs, they rolled back in my head too. As soon as I said like inverted yield curve, that's like talking about currency or something here. If I want to make sure all the audience goes away, let's talk inverted yield curves and currency, strength, weakness, and, you know, relationship, the euro, yen, you know, things like that. We'll lose everybody, okay? But just trust me. If you don't know what an inverted yield curve is, good for you. You don't need to, okay? But for those that are all fixated, hot and bothered, fussed about it, which is the entire rest of the system, the 10-year minus the 3-month spread is now positive. Does this mean that the recession is off? Question? This would be the 89th recession in the past 10 years that has been forecasted and then called off. Isn't that the bottom line truth? There is no, absolutely no accountability. As long as you're negative, as long as you're negative, wrong, 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 wrong about Europe, wrong about TARP, wrong about TALF, wrong about when we stop it, wrong about interest rates rising, wrong, 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 wrong about Italy. Do I go on? No, I'm already boring myself. I'm done. But you get the point. There's a 10, 20, 30 other things that we've all heard the last 10 years. Dead wrong. But that's okay. Keep calling for it. This time it's the inverted yield curve. Tomorrow it'll be, who knows? The dollar's too strong. The dollar's too weak. I don't know. But I do know that in order to get people to buy equity index annuities, it will not work. In order to get them to buy gold and put it in their safe where they can't get anything off of it. But we did. We got a huge boatload of commissions. We got to scare them. We've got to frighten them. And if I want to become the great economist that called, you know, the 2008 crash and stuff like that, then I got to call for all the end of the world. And one day, if I live long enough, I will be right. That's not right. That's called a stopwatch. It's absolutely right. 89 times the last 10 years. I guess that recession's called off. Well said. What's the matter with us? Why do we give time to things like this, to people like this? Why do we live our lives in such utter, like, Eeyores? That's it. We're utter Eeyores.
I know, it's all right, but it's not all right for me. I know the economy's okay, but we're all about to die. In the end, everybody will ignore me. And off we'll go and just go die.
Wow. You won the lottery, man. We were born in America in the greatest time ever. Greatest country, greatest time. And all we worry about is the food good enough? I mean, okay, worry about it. But don't tell me that we're all dying. The world's so toxic, we're all dying. Really? Why are life expectancies exploding then? Oh, I know in America they're not. Yeah, I know. Because of the opioid crisis. Something that has nothing to do with anything except bad human behavior. Nonsense. We just walk around like Eeyores all the time. What's the matter with us? What is the matter with us? It makes no sense. And it's not just that. You see, because you won't invest, you don't invest, you don't do the right things. If the world's ending, do we? Why would you? Why would you? Let's go to the phones. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Let's go to Paul. Paul, thank you for holding. Go ahead, please.
Morning, Dave.
Good morning, sir.
Hey, we've been converted by you years ago.
Good.
We don't listen to any of that garbage.
Good.
Okay, so we're both retired. I want to know what the asset allocation mix should be. We're probably 69% stock.
Okay.
And the rest of it's private money market.
Okay. Why? Why 31% earning less than the inflation rate?
That's why I'm calling.
Okay. I'm just asking you. I'm asking why you want it there. Because it's important.
We closed it out from another family.
Okay. All right. So what I'm getting at is if you are needing income, then we need to keep some in short-term things anyway, okay? Is it just for long-term? Are we going to draw just a simple couple percent off of it like you could do with dividend-paying stocks and things like that? What is the purpose of this chunk of money?
It's there for, you know, the next year or two.
For a year or two?
Yeah.
And meaning it all comes out at one time?
No. Just dribble.
Just dribble it out at that. Okay, yeah. So it's going to be there for a year or two to grow, and then after that we're going to draw income from it. Is that a fair statement?
Sure.
Okay. All right. Then I would be 100% stocks. I just would be careful with what kinds of stocks. Because, you know, people say stocks, and I go, well, guess what? Micron and Idaho Power are stocks. Do they look the same to you? Right. You know,
no.
Right. So we want, what I'm talking about is it's serial dividend increasers. And I'm going to throw out a couple names, not because you want to go buy them, but what I'm talking about is these are the ones you got to look at, but you can get them through ETFs and mutual funds that can
do
the work.
Mutual funds.
Okay. That's great. And what you want to do is be looking at those and you can, and they are looking for these types of companies. Apple is a serial dividend increaser. You know what, we talk about Apple all the time because of iPhone and all those things, and they change the world, and they should be talked about a lot. But the idea of trading their stock, to me, seems silly. What I'm really saying is their income, the dividend, going up crazily every year, and is it a tiny, tiny fraction of their profitability, not a big percentage? In other words, is there a margin of safety that they're going to keep doing what I'm in love with, which is them sending me more money every year?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's a company like that. Honeywell, United Technologies, companies like that that are serial dividend increasers, not necessarily companies that have paid dividends for 50 years, but for the last 10 years, 5 years, 20 years, they are raising the dividends and their cash flow is growing. That gives you a margin of safety in all of your choices. But most importantly, what does it do? It gives you an ever-increasing income into your portfolio, into your pocket, without you worrying about whether Honeywell went from 150 to 130. It's irrelevant if they raise their dividends every year. That what you're the relevance. That, in other words, we see price and value as the same thing, and it's just not. It's not even close. Price, it only matters when you buy or sell. Value matters every year. Is my value, my income going up? That's what we're targeting. And you can do it easily through mutual funds. I'm just giving you companies that have done that because it's a better picture than telling you, you got to go to the Wisdom Tree Dividend Growth Portfolio ETF. That's not what okay, those are great for you to make a one decision, bam, I'm going to go do that, and I like that idea. But let's start that now and get the dividends reinvesting, right? And so that your income in 2 years is even higher than it would be now, because you're reinvesting those dividends, and guess what else is happening? Those dividends are being raised for the next year and two before you even turn it on. So you get compounding of those dividends. You also getting raising of those dividends, and so you're targeting where we're going down the road. Now, as we get closer to the time where you're wanting income, if you don't generate enough income in that portfolio just from the dividends, and you probably will, but if you don't and you need to be using actual capital from the portfolio, then you'll want to be creating some pools of cash that you can draw on because you don't want to sell when the market's down. That's how you create a death spiral in an income portfolio, and you need to avoid that.
Right.
Okay?
Okay.
Perfect.
Thank you.
You got it, Paul. Thanks for the call. Have a good day.
Okay.
Bye now. And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. Diane, I'm sorry you called at exactly the end of the first hour. We'd love to put you up to bat. You had a great question, and I hope you'll call back. And I hope all of you listening will give us a call. Our board is clear. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. I like that. What is that, Ray? Really? How come I don't recognize it? It's crazy. All right. Welcome to Money Matters. I'm Dave Petso, and thank you for tuning in. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. And let's go ahead and go to the phones. Let's go to Terry. Terry, thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
Well, good morning, Professor.
Professor, back at you. How are you, sir?
Well, we haven't assumed room temperature yet, so it's a good day.
That's good. That's good. I know you've been sick, so.
I had to call up. I haven't ever said this verbally. It's just been passed back and forth in emails and whatnot. But an optimist, a pessimist, a realist, and an opportunist. After listening to you start out this morning, I said, just thought of that. But the optimist, the glass is half full. Mm-hmm. The pessimist, the glass is half empty. The realist says, you have 50% too much glass. And the opportunist said, I just drank your whiskey.
That's good. Let's be optimistic opportunists. How's that?
Yeah, and as far as your music going on, you need to change over to theme music of REM's The End of the World as We Know It.
Just good. I like that. You're right. That's good. That's
but
very good.
With all of this going, the China and the tariffs and everything, what does this really have to do with the price or the temperature of the water in my pool?
Mm-hmm.
Right. I keep thinking about it and trying to find something reasonable, but it basically it doesn't do a darn thing anymore.
That's right, and you're right. And the market becomes weary of it, too, whenever you get this constant mantra. You think about that, too. I was reading a Wall Street Journal editorial, that, which, by the way, these past week or so with the Democratic meltdown have been incredible.
Yeah.
And don't misunderstand, the Wall Street Journal is not a right-wing newspaper. It's a right-up-the-middle paper.
Mm-hmm.
So they have articles all over the place. But it was very... You know, people thinking about these things and what's going on politically is an important enough thing. I think it's worth going back and looking at if you have access to it for the week. That's why I mention it. They've been incredible. But anyway, so my point is reading that and looking at all of the optimism, pessimism, all these things that you are referring to and where we're at and what does it have to do with anything? The American people do not have any idea or they don't think about the Mueller investigation impeaching the president. It's not in the top list of what they're concerned about.
Mm-hmm.
We've become weary of it.
Well,
all
we're doing is trying to hate.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And we become weary of it. We become weary of race baiting, of the Me Too thing. You know, I don't understand the Me Too thing. You know, I just don't get it. The women in our country, this is a great country, and we've done amazing things to make it better. And so I don't get that I don't know. All these things where everybody is a victim of something is wearing people out. And not just me. I think it's wearing everybody out. We're tired of it. And we want to move on. And I just think we've maybe, okay, that's the optimist in me, have bottomed in all this pessimism and all this hate and all this stuff. But when we don't see the world correctly, then we can't invest, we don't move forward, and it's not just being Tigger here versus Eeyore. It's true. It's just more of a, if you will, almost a Winnie the Pooh thing, like, what does that have to do with my happiness? Just that peaceful feeling. It's like it doesn't. Then why do I, Christopher Robin, tell me why I have to worry about this?
You're going to live longer if you smile more is the way I look at it. Just be happy. And I look at you talking about the Me Too thing. My girlfriend's been transcribing the minutes from the meetings of the Columbia Club back in from, I don't know, 1899 through 1920, you know, when we made the mistake of, no, I shouldn't say that. I try to be silly and I don't want to, but giving women the vote, the suffrages.
Right.
And
right.
It's just everybody acting like they're all mad that they didn't do it sooner or we didn't do it better or we now that the world. Everybody wants somebody to hate. We should have done it better. Where instead we should look at the rest of the world and say, wait a minute, we did this. Look what it did for us. And you should have probably followed along a little quicker. And everything would have been better all around the world.
Exactly. I agree. And we are a beacon to the world. And we've changed so many things in the world through example, the right way, right? Not because we came in and told them, you will change. We've protected people from abuse of dictators, but we don't force our ways upon them. But who doesn't want to be us?
Yeah, well, we've screwed up and hired our own dictators, but that's beside the point.
Yep.
But anyway, I've bloviated long enough here. I'll let you get on with the...
All right. Well, I'm glad you're upright, and you have a great day, Terry. Thanks for the phone call.
Same to you, Dave.
Thank you, sir.
You.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Now.
And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Okay. You know what I think we should do, Ray? Let's go ahead and pop this news commercial out of the way. So I'm actually on track. Usually I'm racing to catch up at the end of the hour. But we're going to get that out of the way and take your calls at 580-KIDO. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436 is our number. 580-KIDO. If you prefer email, it's dave@petsofinancial.net. You know, I may not get to structured notes and all, but if you have questions about that, we'll touch on it, and maybe somebody will want me to go into more detail again later. But I did want to real quickly touch on the fact of we utilize them to simply as a comparison point to what an equity indexed annuity promises. And I went to, I've said this for literally for decades, right? If there was such thing as an equity index annuity that had a very, very, very low commission or a no commission, I'd look at it and consider it. Because who doesn't want upside with no downside? That's not a bad thing for people who are extremely, quotes, risk averse, which I don't consider risk. I consider it price averse. But it is what it is. I have to deal with human beings. We can't just pretend that people don't think the way they think or ignore the way they think. We can try to change it, but it doesn't mean that they're going to come along fully and fully embrace that market gyrations are normal and certain to occur and just plain old fine. Doesn't really matter. But not everybody feels that way. So having some kind of guarantees is very important to them. And it might even be structurally important to them if they're at a certain point and need money delivered on a certain date of a certain amount. And so those are the types of things that a structured note or an equity index annuity might promise. Although there's so many other problems with equity index annuities, it doesn't work. Anyway, here's the short of it. The short is, with an equity index annuity that has no commissions, I mean, this is a great company that does it. A great company. And I finally, this is the first one I've seen. This is it. Because why? Because they're trying to get into the advisor world, people like me, that we do not charge commissions for things. We advise people. Doesn't matter what you own, we get paid a fee. So we don't try to sell product. It doesn't matter if you buy a bond stock or your portfolio has whatever in it. Okay? It doesn't make any difference at all. We get paid the same. So they're going after that community, which, of course, is the far and away. People like us are the ones that are growing, right? There are what are called registered investment advisories are the ones that are growing in the world, exploding growth. So they're going after that space, and they created a product, therefore, that has no commission in it. So I took a look at it. I was like, yeah, okay. So on the front, you know, the cap is at 8%. I don't want to get too far in the weeds here, but the cap means I can get up to 8%. I get to own that or earn that for in the year. So if the market's up 20, I get 8. That's not great, but, you know, it has a cap. And then it guarantees after 6 years that I'm not, you know, or any of those years, I won't go backwards. I don't lose money. Okay. Yeah, okay. It's not great. There's an asterisk there. So I read the asterisk down here in the bottom in the teeny tiny print, and I'm not kidding you. I did have to squint. Teeny tiny print at the bottom of the sales brochure, the cap can go down to 2%. There it is. At the end of 12 months. Now, I'm in a contract that I have to be in for 6 years to get out of. Now, that's not because they pay commissions. That's great. That's true. But they also have to tie up, if they're going to guarantee the downside, they have to utilize the dividends that they took out of your pocket, by the way, because the index does not include dividends. They take the dividends to buy the downside protection. Okay, so in order to do that, they have to tie it up for a period of time, 6 years in this case. So I'm going to go into a product that I know what the parameters are for a 1 year, and I can't get out without a big penalty, but they can completely change the terms to make it completely horrifying for all the rest of the time. I must have fallen off the turnip truck because there is no way I want to do that. Oh, that's right, I forgot. That's exactly how equity index annuities are and always have been. All of them are. And they still, even without the commission, don't fix the structure. Now, I made this statement a couple weeks ago, and I hate broad-based statements. But I used to be on a board with an insurance company, and it was a good insurance company. They never live up to any of their promises. Never, ever, ever. Now, in fairness, interest rates have come down. I get that since the 1980s that I've been in this industry. But I'm not betting that that thing's going to have the same cap a year from now. They have never, ever kept any of their promises. Never, never, never do their illustrations pan out the way they say. Ever. Why am I going to be in something that they can change and I can't? That would be the definition of getting fleeced. Legally fleeced. Not a chance. And this is a no-commission product? What do you think it is when they take 10% up front? Wow. Wow. No, they're just horrible. And that's why we're using structured notes. That's why the world's turning to them. Because if you need to have a downside guarantee, then use them. They're clean. They're straight up. And the upside is 100%. Literally. Not even 100%. I'm sorry. I just said that wrong. It's unlimited upside. You have more than 100% participation. You give up the dividends. You shouldn't do it. But if you need to have underlying guarantees, they're wonderful. They're wonderful. And they're clean. Straight up. 3-year, a 4-year, a 5-year. Longer you go, the better your terms are. Blah, blah, blah. Clean. Straight up. They even have FDIC insurance if you want it. If you're willing to pay for it. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO, if you have any comments or questions about it. And as always, I've always offered this. Anybody want to argue about annuities and their and how wonderful they are, especially equity index annuities? And don't get me wrong, there are places for annuities. But I haven't found one for an equity index annuity yet. And I've, for 30 years, have said, yeah, you want to talk about it? If you sell them. The phone's open. Always has been. Phone's open. Let's go to Bob in Boise. Bob, thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
Good morning. With the earlier caller, you talked about using dividends or gains, I think, from a equity portfolio for retirement needs. Mm-hmm. So. And that's within like a couple of years. So what's the role of a short-term or intermediate bond? Would that be like 2 to 8 years if you look at a bucket approach?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great question, really. No, Bob, I don't. I think here's the thing. I don't want to try to guess what the markets are doing, so I don't want you to misunderstand what I'm saying. It's a really important distinction that I'm going to make here. And if it isn't clear when I'm done with this, please hold me accountable, okay? All right? What I'm saying when we're talking about ground conditions, I'm not saying time the market, okay? We're not going to time the market here. But I have to look at what the ground conditions are. And when interest rates are this low, okay, near zero, and if I look at, and I'm just going to give a simplistic approach, and we can circle back and talk to death on the short-term bonds, but they're right around 2%, right? You can get the short-term, even money markets are near 2% now, right? So you can get 2% on that. But here's my point. A 10-year treasury sets everything in motion, right? That's the mortgage rates and all those things. The whole wide world's interest rates are based on the U.S. government's 10-year treasury. One way or another, they are. But it's 2.4% today for 10 years. Here's what I know for a retiree. The classic models, and if you go there on, say, Vanguard's website, I'm not picking on Vanguard, it's all over the place, right? And that's what all these Monte Carlo simulations, including the one that's on our website, run off of a 60-40 portfolio, 40% in bonds. So here's what they're telling you to do and have told you to do for the last 10 years, 20 years, 30 years. Here's what you should do. You should put 60% in stocks and 40% in bonds. And bonds representing by 2.4%, and then that gives you a 90% success chance of success of taking out 4% per year with a 3% cost of living. And here's what I'm saying about ground conditions, Bob. If you put 40% of your money in 2.4% and you're going to take out 4 and you're going to inflate it every year by 3, implying 7, here's what I guarantee, Bob. You'll run out of money. You don't have a 90% chance of success. You have 0 chance of success because the ground conditions have changed. And I don't care what your Monte Carlo simulation says about the 8% bonds and the 7 and the 6. We don't have that right now. And you can run it through 10 million different calculations. And it won't be any more accurate because garbage in is garbage out. And so we have a circumstance now where ground conditions are or do I have some alternatives to bonds? Because 2% isn't going to work for 40% of my portfolio. Or is it 5% of my portfolio? Should I put 10? It depends on what you're trying to do when you're building a portfolio. So when we talk about a bucket approach, I don't like it. I don't like a bucket approach. I like my bucket to be pouring. I think of it as a reservoir, okay? Rainwater, snow melt. Once in a while, the snow melts in the spring, and that replenishes the reservoir. But all year long, it rains, right? And so that rain is interest, it's dividend payments from the stocks. In other words, the reservoir doesn't drain very fast if I'm getting a lot of rain coming in. A lot of income coming in doesn't drain the reservoirs quickly. So I don't have to go to the sidelines and worry about, very often, going out and getting and selling off, say, stocks or assets of any kind, and therefore worrying about price movement. Because as I've said many times, when you sell down, it is a death spiral to an income portfolio. We have to avoid that. And that's where you might have a little tiny bit in bond funds, even though it's a losing position to what your goal is. If it's small enough, we can overcome it. But that allows me to go in that little 5% piece and say, well, you know what? We can wait for the market to recover because I've got the income coming in from everything, and I've got a little tiny bit in bonds that isn't going to go down. And then that I can sell to replenish if the market's down. Normally, you don't have to sell those funds because there's going to be opportunities to chip away and replenish the reservoir even through the year. You don't do this once a year. But that's why I don't like buckets. We're saying we got a 5-year bucket, and we got a 5 to 10 year bucket, and we got a 10 plus year bucket. Like, we have some kind of definition for those periods of time. Maybe it works in your brain, but it doesn't work in reality when interest rates are so low. Because what I'm really saying is I do want 40% of my portfolio to be earning no more than 2%. I don't want that if I need to earn 7 to break even. Does that make sense?
So if you don't want to time the market, because that ain't cool to do, you're going to have some. You want to make sure you have your needs there for a couple of years. Shouldn't you take the cream off the top and those gains and put that aside for those 2 or 3 years?
While markets are up, that's exactly why you put away 5-6% in short-term bonds, why it's up. Because let's put it this way. You want to have 3 to 5 years of cash readily available because that'll sustain you through any historic downturn, right? 3 to 5 years. So let's just call it 5. I want 5. Okay, well, what does that look like? Well, if I have enough cash flow, see, dividends don't stop because the market goes down. Did the company still pay dividends? Even in 2008 and 2009, they paid dividends. So if I'm having my income still coming in, then the reservoir is not draining. It's not like I have a bucket that I drain out completely and then I go back to the next bucket. I am sitting here looking at it and I go, okay, if I have 2 years, but two-thirds of my income is met by my regular dividends coming into my portfolio, and those dividends can be consisting of and should be consisting of REITs, real estate investment trusts, that are pouring money in, and their average is like around 5%. And there's some of those that are available in mutual funds that are actually a little bit higher because they may add in some preferred stocks on those REITs. And I know I'm getting in the weeds, but what I'm saying is instead of a bond, how about bond alternatives, right? And floating rate notes that maybe are getting 4 or 5% in a rising interest rate environment. We add some of those things in, and they look and act a lot like bonds, but they're not. And they're paying out enough income that we're getting really close to getting all of our income along with those serial dividend increasers that are going to take over as we get older, right? Because, hey, if Apple's paying 3 times the dividend in 10 years that they are today, okay, that might be all that I need. And I'm not saying all I need for all my income, but companies like that. So I don't have to have it. So that growth of income is the most important part for later. But for now, it also comes raining in to my portfolio. So let's say 2/3, 3/4 of my money is made there. Then what does that tell me? It tells me I need to have 2 years or less of income in this bond, in this short-term bond, and maybe less. And so you can have it in this short-term bond fund, making 2. You can have all of your other income coming in, and that's, say, in some cases, 4%, 5%, and 6%, right, is raining in, meaning I won't, if I never sold anything, I won't run out of money for 5 years. To me, that's a 5-year reservoir. And during that 5 years, isn't there going to be something that I can keep replenishing the bonds if I've sold them down? Replenish the reservoir? Absolutely. Absolutely there is. And so during that time, you're always harvesting gains, to your point.
So you are kind of a bucket, like one bucket.
Exactly. You are. You are like one bucket. But when tech stocks take off, and you say, well, who has tech stocks in a retirement portfolio? A little piece of growth always pays off. I learned that in 97, 98, and 99. For income people. Why? Because the only thing that worked in the market was air.com. I didn't have to understand it, embrace it, love it. But that's why you don't time the market and you don't say all or nothing. I don't want any of that garbage because you would have missed the big run. And in this case, you didn't want to sell off your dividend paying stocks and at that time, bonds were paying a lot. You didn't want to sell them off because they were really juicy at that time because nobody liked them. Everybody just wanted to go air.com, and that's what they bought. And so by doing that, we were able to trim at enormous prices and replenish the reservoir. So you have all of the different asset classes, and yes, you have one bucket. You don't sit there and say, I don't ever want to sell my stock bucket. This is my growth bucket. For what? If the market gives you 100% gain in a couple of years because it loves tech stocks, take it. Run with it. Harvest some of it, at least. Micron just went up 20 points. Great. And all companies like Micron. What's wrong with selling a few shares? Nothing. Nothing is. And then you harvest it and put it in there. And that's why you should be 3 to 5 years. So when the market's bad, you don't have to raise 2 more years. Leave it alone for now. Give it time. But when the markets are good, you got 5 years in your bucket. Make sense?
It does. So then what you're talking about then is that 60-40, you may be a 75-year-old and be 90% in equities?
Absolutely.
Is that what you're saying also?
Absolutely. Right. It's the ground conditions. If my stocks are, and they will be for me, okay, because I love what I do. I can retire, but I'm not going to retire. I don't think I ever will. But let's say I do, I get sick or whatever, and I retire. You know what I'm going to live on? I'm going to live on dividends because I have a built-in cost of living. A built-in income increase, it's 3 times the cost of living over the last 50 years. I'll take that. And so I never have to worry about selling a stock if Apple just pays me a dividend every quarter and it raises its dividend every year. Then I'm ahead of the cost of living. That's all I'll live on. I just live on that cash flow. And then I never worry about prices. I'll be 100% stocks. But the point you're making is, yes, of course, you could be, but depending on ground conditions. But like I tell people, look, if there was an 8% government bond out there today, we'd be probably about 90% in government bonds for you. But they don't make that right now. And the last time they did, inflation was 14, so it was a really bad bet too. We have to adjust to ground conditions. That's not market timing, and it's not reactive to what is already transpired. It's simply saying, will this work or what works the best? Here's what I saw what REITs did, and I don't mean publicly traded, and I don't want to get in the weeds. But what I saw in the fourth quarter of last year is that REITs did not go down. They didn't go down. Everything went down from gold, oil, call commodities. The stock market got crushed in the fourth quarter. What didn't go down was this asset class. Now that is diversification. And that's where you would go get money from if you need to. And by the way, it pays 5%. So that's a nice gift into your portfolio. So what I'm saying is when bonds aren't working, we do have alternatives. Not in hindsight, like, wow, I got to hurry and go get that because it's way up. No, it's not a reaction to it. It's a reaction to what the conditions are. If something won't work, why am I owning a bunch of it? Because the textbook said I should? Well, the textbook's wrong. If it's 2.4% 10-year treasury, and I'm supposed to put 40% of my portfolio in it and draw 4% income with a 3% cost of living increase, look, I'm not a mathematician, but I guarantee you that won't work. And tell me again why I need to do that? I don't. And that's why we have to examine the ground conditions all the time. That's not market timing. It's saying I'm not going to buy things that I know won't work. Period.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Bob. I appreciate the call. We got to roll. All right. Thank you. Have a great day.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And we got to take our final break. And when we come back, it is 580-KIDO. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thanks again for joining us today. Hey, if you have any comments or questions during the week, we'd love to hear from you. And we'd love to hear what you want to talk about, what you'd like to dive deeper into. Love to have your comments. That's at petsofinancial.com. Also, we've got our podcast there if you would like to, you know, replay something, catch something you, or even, I know it's really strange when you get to look at the world and find out some people are probably overseas in Europe or whatever, but, you know, and the Russians are monitoring the program, by the way, I'm pretty sure, because we get hits in Russia once in a while for where people have downloaded the podcast. So I'm pretty sure the Russians, it's, I know, we're colluding as well. It's clear. It's clear. Anyway, you go there because the podcasts are there. And once again, I wanted to say to, you know, Jennifer and Tom and Erica, thanks again for filling in last week. And I hope you enjoy them very much. It's always nice to listen to a different voice, a different take. And they are wonderful at it. And I really appreciate it. I know most people know this, but Jennifer has been working with me, and I do mean with me, closely for 25 years. It's just an amazing partnership, and I really appreciate what she's done to help us as an office build. And she certainly is, you know, more than capable on her own, as you have heard. So, and thank you to them. And what I think the newbie is Erica. She's been with us for a couple years and now 8 years experience in the industry. And Tom has been with us for, what, 12 or 15 years. So I'm really blessed to have an office that, well, that hangs around, right? We don't have to have a lot of turnover. Hey, I promise we would we will continue on some of these really cool numbers, statistics. I know it's a little bit eggheadish, but really cool stuff on the market. Just really interesting things, you know, to contemplate. I'll give you one real quick because it's really interesting to think. But during the entire 1970s, you know how the Dow is. You know, we think about it and think about the growth rate of 10% per year. But the Dow was up a whopping, are you ready? 38 points during the whole decade of the 70s. 38 points. That's it. Not 38%. 38 points. Ugh. What a grind. What a grind. Isn't that crazy? That's why we have to understand the market doesn't always, every year isn't great. But a little bit over time is huge. It's just huge. All right, I've got 1 minute left. I will mention this real quickly. What the heck is a structured note, okay? I'm asked that all the time. Structured notes, if they are what I call clean, meaning they do not are not having a high commission built in, they are clean. They can do about anything. And what I mean is I don't mean they're superhuman. What I mean is you can structure them to do about anything. But the ones we've been talking about, the ones that I ask the people at TD Ameritrade and other banks, okay, I'm not throwing anybody under the bus, but Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, to please tell me and show me, and now I get monthly what they are, from all of these different banks, whether it's TD, JP Morgan, all these others. Okay, I'm running out of time here. But what it does is it gives these terms. I wanted to have the terms that simply said, over like a 5-year period, can you guarantee the downside of zero? I can't go down at all on the S&P 500. What kind of upside do I have? Now, this depends on market volatility, and I don't want to go in the weeds, but it does depend on market volatility. So it ranges anywhere from, typically, like typical meaning 99% of the time, 100% upside to 150% upside protection or upside participation. That's what it is. Why buy an equity index annuity? Don't. There's better alternatives. I'll cover more in the future. Have a great weekend, everybody, and thanks for tuning in.